From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Monday, November 11th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
You're yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. What do you say we get things started on a Monday with our Monday march back to work? Come on, let's do this. Shoulders back, stiff backbone, smile on your face, prayer on your lips, and everything is going to be just fine. Trust me. You know, I have a lot of confidence in myself when I say that. Trust me. All right, let's get things officially started with
the Daily Denogram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets, you get to make the call. Says here, a smart person knows a good attorney. Of course. Always have to have a good attorney around. It's a smart attorney who knows the judge.
I'm going to put him in jail till he rots.
Let's move along now with the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
Here we go.
Gather round, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
I want to be sure.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
All righty.
You might be quizzed.
Yeah. Well, kids, today, of course, being the 11th of November, means it is Veterans Day. And my thanks to all my fellow veterans. Thank you for your service. It was an honor serving with you, whether I served with you directly or indirectly. And my thanks to my friend Tommy Rogelio for putting on such a, organizing and putting on such a great Veterans Day celebration back on Saturday in the thriving metropolis of Santa Fe, Texas. It was great. All right, it was on this day in 1966, NASA launched Gemini 12, the 10th and last Gemini mission. So if it was Gemini 12, why was it only the 10th mission? I thought those space engineers were supposed to know their math. Who knows? And it was on this day in 1993, a sculpture honoring women who served in the Vietnam War was dedicated at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C. If you ever get a chance to see it. And the wall as well. But the sculpture honoring the women who served in Vietnam, they were angels, you know. They really were. And a lot of them are still around. And God bless them all. Elon Musk and X, or Twitter if you prefer, have developed a censorship-free platform. And now that he's established himself as a pro-Trump voice, a lot of people are wondering about his potential in a Trump cabinet, because there are concerns about his ties to China and how this may affect future American policy. You know, the possibilities there are almost endless, really. I mean, he bristles at the thought of having to censor anybody for any reason on any of his platforms around the world, because X, formerly Twitter, is a worldwide source for social media. Now, there are some countries where it's banned. Elon Musk most recently has gone head-to-head with the rulers in Brazil, which Brazil just recently went basically communist. And Brazil will not allow a no-holds-barred social media post. So, there are concerns about his ties to China and how this may affect future American policy, with a lot of people wondering if his ties to China are going to conflict with Trump's policies. I don't think so, personally. But then again, what do I know? I'm just a blogger. But there's been no confirmation that Musk is a member of Trump's DC leadership either. Now, he's known for his technological prowess. My gosh, he's a genius there. And he's positioning himself as a prominent conservative figure, possibly joining Trump's advisory team. I mean, he's kind of unofficially joined, but he's not officially there. So this position may increase Musk's influence on global affairs, particularly with the U.S. and China. I mean, his contributions to Trump's campaigns, which exceeded, are you sitting down? Exceeded $75 million, demonstrate his growing political involvement. Now, where this is going to take him in the future is anybody's guess. But you can bet it's going to be interesting. Furthermore, Musk's connections extend beyond Trump, including contentious ties to Vlad Putin. And, you know, naturally, affiliations of this nature are going to raise concerns about Musk's influence over U.S. foreign policy. But think about it here for a second. You know, with Musk's companies, you got your SpaceX, which is an amazing outfit, heavily reliant on government contracts, of course. The implications of these alliances are pretty far-reaching and could impact defense strategies. Could. I'm just going to put the quotes around that word, could. Now, Musk's extensive business operations in China, the ones already in place, place him in a unique position. Tesla investments, including a major facility in Shanghai, indicate close economic ties with Beijing. And these ventures may complicate Trump's administration's goals of reducing reliance on Chinese manufacturing. May, again, got to put quotes around that word, may. Now, Musk's recent statements suggesting Taiwan's integration under Beijing's rule highlight potential diplomatic stumbling blocks. Then again, Musk faces a lot of stumbling blocks for the future. It's becoming more and more apparent nobody wants an EV. At least nobody really matters. People who really depend on their vehicles can't have an EV. There's the problem of recharging them. If you can't recharge an EV in 5 minutes or less, it's totally worthless to you if you need your vehicle to do your job. Whether you're hauling freight, whether you're working as a messenger, you know, anything, having outside sales. You can't have an EV. It's totally out of the question. And Toyota is making some real inroads in the area of hydrogen fuel cell vehicles. That's showing far more promise than EVs. And then there's the environmental problem that EVs face. And at some point up the road, Elon Musk is going to have to face this. There will come a time, mark my words, there will come a time, and probably sooner than later, when Tesla and its manufacturing facilities are going to have to shift into another form of fueling vehicles. If he intends to continue building cars, he's going to have to work on another way to fuel his vehicles. Plug-in vehicles ain't gonna cut it, my friend. So yeah, he's got a lot of challenges ahead, but I don't think anybody really doubts his ability to meet those challenges. See, this is the thing. We are, after all, dealing with someone who appears to be a genius. So anyhow, the Chinese embassy in Washington says the Chinese embassy was not aware of the specifics of any requests made by Putin on China's behalf. Okay. Now, with Musk serving as a political advisor, and that's all he is right now, balancing his business goals with national interests requires diplomatic skills. It really does. And he's got them. Observers note that Beijing is keeping a close eye on Musk, recognizing his influence over Trump. And the way Musk navigates his vested interests in China while remaining committed to American policies is still being scrutinized. Now, this Musk-Trump collaboration could reshape geopolitical strategies. Now, Musk's control over SpaceX and Starlink, both very critical players in defense and communications, strengthens his position in shaping the future of U.S. space and foreign policy. Does he have us over a barrel? You know, the U.S. government? No. But I could see that situation arising at some point in the future, yeah. And his ventures appear to be consistent with a nationalistic space race agenda centered on dominance and expansion. So this collaboration has the potential to return America to the Cold War era space race mindset, of course, fueled by market gains and security imperatives. So Musk's foresight, and there's a lot of it. This guy sees stuff you and I, we won't see for decades. And his foresight is consistent with a vision pretty much centered on celestial colonization, challenging China and Russia for control of the final frontier. Broader implications are many for national security and economic policies that can't be overstated. You know, the entire world is watching. The entire world is watching how these dynamics play out. And what Elon Musk is doing these days, right now, no matter how you look at it, no matter how you try to contextualize it, what he's doing now is really big. The overall forensic analysis of the election is going to go on for a long time. Get used to it. And a lot of the stuff is interesting, and I found this one particularly interesting in an article in the Epoch Times. The headline being, DNC official says campaign donors feel misled about Harris's chance of victory. Well, Jacob Berg is the one who wrote the article, and he said the Democratic National Committee official, Lindy Lee, said on November 9th that party donors feel misled about Vice President Kamala Harris's chance at winning the 2024 presidential election after it raised a record amount of funds in slightly more than 100 days of campaigning. Now, later on, maybe if you're interested in doing it, you can go to the internet and look up some of the articles that have to do with how much money they raised in how short a period of time. Basically, it was 100 days. So the amount of money they raised to put Kamala Harris over the top is mind-boggling. So Ms. Lee, who's a member of the DNC National Finance Committee, said during an interview on, believe it or not, Fox and Friends Weekend. What was she doing over at the Fox News Channel? She's a Democrat. She said, the truth is this is just an epic disaster. This is a $1 billion disaster. So she got into it a little more detail. She said they're $20 million or $18 million in debt. It's incredible. And I raised millions of that. I have friends I have to be accountable to and explain what happened because I told them it was a margin of error race. Well, that's what everybody was led to believe, right? Did you watch any of the mainstream media? Read any of the mainstream media publications? New York Times, New York Post, Los Angeles Times? You know, it's mind-boggling the degree to which the mainstream media will lie to you just to fulfill their own political biases. And then she said, I believed her. My donors believed her. And so they wrote massive checks. I just feel like a lot of us were misled. So anyhow, after Trump defied the odds, and boy, did he outperform polling expectations. I don't know if you recall, but a couple of weeks ago, I predicted that this might turn out to be a landslide. I don't know if this is actually a landslide victory, but it sure looks like it. I mean, it's way off from what the mainstream media was trying to lead you to believe that it was going to be. So, I mean, he outperformed polling expectations for the third time in a row, and a lot of Democrats have been assigning blame for Harris losing all seven battleground states to Trump. That ought to tell you volumes right there. That speaks volumes. The fact that she lost the seven battleground states. So you got a lot of moderate Democrats, including Representative Tom Suozzi of New York. They blame the progressive left for its fixation on topics like transgender issues over cost of living and border security for why the vice president and the Democrat Party lost on November 5th. But then again, you want to get into the issue of cost of living? That rests squarely on the shoulders of the Democrats and the entire Democrat Party. They did nothing to try to get Biden to back off on his Bidenomics, which were disastrous. And we're going to continue to feel Bidenomics for at least a year to 18 months from now. I would be very surprised if we really start to feel the effects of Trumponomics any sooner than 2 years from now. Anyhow, progressives recently fired back, as they want to do, you know? And they claim that exit poll data would paint a different picture. Although one poll found that the focus on transgender issues was one of the most motivating factors for voters throughout the nation choosing Trump instead of Harris. You know, and then somewhere just right below that is the border issue, of course. And Bernie Sanders, who caucuses with Democrats and he ran in the party's 2016 and 2020 primaries, blamed the DNC leadership for defending the status quo and abandoning the working class in his analysis of Harris's loss. Then again, every time that Bernie Sanders opens his mouth, I turn away because the man is an idiot. He's a total idiot. He's a socialist idiot. So, idiot that he is, he wrote in a November 6th letter posted on X, he says, in the coming weeks and months, those of us concerned about grassroots democracy and economic justice need to have some very serious political discussions. That's an understatement. But regardless of how the party chooses to move forward, Ms. Lee, Lindy Lee, said that she had suspicions on election night when others in her party seemed confident of the vice president's chances. And she said, I asked them, are you privy to internal numbers that I'm not seeing? Because I study this so carefully and I just wasn't seeing any basis for that level of confidence. Sobering, isn't it? Here's yet more forensic analysis from the election. An exit poll released by Democratic polling firm Blueprint outlined the top three reasons voters nationwide gave for not supporting Vice President Harris. Well, the leading issue for voters was that inflation is too high. This was, it's the economy, stupid. How many months ago did I mention this? I guess it was right around the time that it was finally determined that, yeah, Harris was going to be the nominee by default. There was no primary, as you realize. But, how many times did I mention? It's the economy, stupid. It's the inflation. It's the price of everything. And wages aren't keeping up with it. So, yeah, the leading issue for voters was inflation's too high. And this was followed by the Biden-Harris administration allowing in too many illegal immigrants. And that Harris focused too much on cultural topics like this transgender bullcorn rather than preserving America's middle class. Let me tell you something, my friend. I've been walking this planet for a long damn time. And I know this much. If America loses the middle class, you lose America. That's all there is to it. Without the middle class, a good, strong middle class, we have no America. Now, the poll asked 3,262 national and swing state voters in the 2 days following the election to rate the importance of potential reasons for their decision to vote for President-elect Trump instead of Harris. And in addition to inflation, illegal immigration, and Harris' focus on transgender stuff, the next three factors named by all voters were that debt rose too high under the Biden-Harris administration, that Harris is too similar to Joe Biden, and that Harris would let in even more illegal immigrants. And one choice that scored high among swing state voters in particular was that Democrats did a bad job running the country. There you go. There you have it. See, when you have social media, when everybody has a voice, when mainstream media is no longer the medium in this country, you have a smarter public, more aware of what's really going on in the world. So the polling report's authors wrote, in the end, Harris couldn't outrun her past or her party. Perhaps it was a lack of time, but it was certainly a vice grip that proved impossible to escape. A good characterization right there. Now, the factors of least concern to voters were that Harris was too pro-Israel, too conservative, or not similar enough to Biden. The poll's findings were published as top Democrats were reeling from Tuesday's election results. I mean, they were all just looking at each other. Did this really happen? What happened here? This can't be true. And of course, all the snowflakes are crying again. It's like that meme with Donald Trump behind the counter at McDonald's, and he's holding one of those little cardboard containers for fries. Only instead of fries in the container, it's duplicates, several copies of this gal. Remember the gal who was wearing the glasses and was looking up to the sky and screaming her lungs out? Well, she's in that little container. And the caption is, "You want cries with that?" That's where they are right now. But you see, this is the problem. The people in the Democrat Party are swallowing hook, line, and sinker the BS that the mainstream media is producing. And your rank and file voter sees beyond that. I'm telling you, the mainstream media is screwed, and they are screwing themselves. What is it, the faith in mainstream media these days among the American people is only at about 20%. So we get back to this guy, Tom Suozzi. We were talking about him earlier. Democrat out of New York. He wrote in a November 7th post on X, he says, "In this election, Americans have made their voice clear. Democrats need to focus more on issues Americans care about, like wages and benefits, and less on being politically correct. Democrats have been too intimidated to speak up for the same values that many of us hold dear, the American dream, public safety, and common sense of right and wrong among them." Well, he's certainly not wrong there. Talk about the issues that concern Americans. All this woke BS. And it's being pushed by people like George Soros. I mean, look at this system that Soros... When did he start that? I guess maybe about 10, 15 years ago? Of going to all the major cities around the country and pushing DAs who believed in no bail or low bail and who believed in emptying the jails. If we're going to fix this country's big, truly big problems, if we're going to put this country on an even course, party be damned. I'm speaking bipartisanly now. Doesn't matter. If we're going to put America back where it belongs, we have to do something about George Soros and his son Alex. And people like them. They're not the only ones. They're just the most prominent among that breed. But we have to do something about what I call the Soros factor. We need to knuckle down on this. If Donald Trump really wants to fix things for the future of this nation and make things better for both parties, that's an area he needs to start in. Right there. Do something about the Soros effect. My God, I first learned about George Soros, what was it, 20, 25 years ago? Almost 25 years ago, listening to Glenn Beck on the radio. And when Glenn Beck first started talking about George Soros, very few people among the voting class in this country, very few people had ever heard that man's name. Nobody knew about him. And then one day on a Sunday, CBS did a 60 Minutes piece on George Soros. But the trouble was, they didn't make it overly complimentary, but it wasn't harsh enough. They should have done what Glenn Beck's been doing all these years, issuing a very stern warning against this man. Tell you a little story that Glenn Beck, this is a story he told, had to be at least 20 years ago. Glenn Beck was invited out to lunch. This is back when he was still doing his show out of New York, so before he moved things to Dallas. And he was invited out to lunch by one of George Soros' surrogates. And during that lunch, this guy had a VHS videotape. And he handed it to Glenn. And basically, tried to blackmail Glenn into letting up on his criticism of George Soros, and Glenn basically told him to go to hell. Beautiful. So, yeah. This, again, is something that's constantly lurking in the background. And until we do something definitively about George Soros and his ilk, we are constantly going to have these distracting problems. Problems that distract from the real issues, not just in our country, but around the world. Because of all this transgender bull crap, we're having to deal with these screaming memes out in our streets, bitching about they want abortions, they want transgender, they want kids to be able to change their sex at the age of 8. And meanwhile, we've got China licking its chops over Taiwan. And this crap's got to stop. It's just got to stop. So Democrats, farther to the left than this guy Suozzi, disagree, of course. And you're always going to have that bunch. These are the wokers. And during a community organizing video call on November 8th, progressive leaders defended their coalition and its focus on marginalized communities. Marginalized communities. We're so concerned about these marginalized people. No, you're only concerned about them because you want them to vote for you. So Ash Lee Woodard Henderson. How about that? Couple of hyphenated names there. Ash Lee Woodard Henderson, co-executive director of the Highlander Research and Education Center, told the virtual attendees in this meeting, "Maybe you're a leftist who feels deep frustration at the many calls to move the Democrats to the center at the expense of targeted and marginalized communities, the expense of suffering people in normal times." Well, progressive Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, who's a Democrat out of Washington State, also dismissed calls to blame the party's left-wing coalitions and their messaging on cultural issues for Harris's loss. And this is always going to be the case. The far loony lefty liberals are never going to get it. They believe the entire universe revolves around them. And they only consist of maybe 1% of the nation's entire population. You've got the tail wagging the dog here. Anyhow, Ms. Jayapal said, "The blame game, you've seen it. It's already started with a lot of cheap shots at our progressive movement. And it's easy to finger point even for us, but we need to resist it." Really? You do so at your own peril, lady. And then she says, "I imagine we share a lot of theories about this election and what led us here, but I think we actually need to look at the exit polling data." Well, yeah, you probably do. And Blueprint's exit polling data seems to validate the concerns of the party's more moderate members, like this guy Suozzi. They have a lot of introspection needed within the Democrat Party. If the Democrat Party was smart, and they're not, maybe they're wising up a little bit, but if they were really smart and they really wanted to start winning elections, the first thing they would do is cast out the far left progressives. Cast them out. And it's easy to do. Stop backing their candidates. Let's head on over to the Comedy Corner and Spence Roper.
I'm excited to be here. Are you guys excited to be here? Okay, so not quite as excited as I am, but still, that's pretty good. No, I'm excited that anyone's here, frankly. Like, I posted that, like, we're doing this show. I hope some people come out. I posted on Facebook, and, like, 3 likes. So I was like, like Aaron said, my name is Spence, and it is just Spence. Like, I'm not a Spencer. I'm not trying to be uptight about it. Like, I'm not some obnoxious person who's like, "I've now become a nomenclature minimalist. Please respect my values and just call me Spence. Also, I don't eat gluten." Like, I'm not that person. I hate that person. So annoying. No, it's my parents really did. They named me just they named me just Spence. Like, they wanted that to be one of my battles in life, I guess, just being Spence instead of Spencer. They did make my middle initial R, though, just to make it super confusing. Like, I guess they just want to mess up any special occasion I might be a part of. And it's worked pretty well. Like, I was getting married this one time, and the guy marrying us was like, Spencer, do you take this woman? So I had to jump in and interrupt him. I had to stop him. I had to interrupt my own wedding to be like, sorry, sir, it's just Spence. But then he got all miffed. Like, I just jumped in to tell him, you know, my friends call me Cooter. And, like, now he decides this is going to be, like, some big teaching moment for him. He's like, well, Spencer, when it's a special occasion, we like to use your full name. So I was like, okay. Well, I guess let's use Spence then. And like that pissed him off even more. Now he's looking over at my parents, like expecting them to come over and spank me for being insolent. And my mom's like, we did name him that. We're silly. And he's like, well, that's stupid. And then he married us. And you know what? Didn't work out.
Of course not. Make it a marvelous Monday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
That's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.